Hello and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. As you know, Revenue Rocket is the world's premier growth strategy and M&A advisor, IT services companies. Today, I have my partner Ryan Barnett with me. Ryan, welcome.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me today. I think we're well into the 100th podcast here. So thanks for recording this and sharing all your knowledge with the IT services firms that are out there.
You bet, Ryan. Today's an interesting topic. I think we're talking about what's warranted for pre-LOI diligence and support of getting a offer versus post-LOI due diligence motions that are needed in order to validate and certify cash flows.
Yeah, let me set this up, Mike. So at Revenue Rocket, we represent both buyers of IT services firms as well as companies if we're fortunate enough to help take them to market and find the right suitor. We help them as well. So we have a unique view in which we are on both sides of the table when it comes to a deal. And in this context, a company, when you typically take yourself to market or and put yourself for sale, you can prepare for a few, I would say, big moments, big milestones to think about. And a few of them are fairly early but big, like you're going to create a teaser for your company. And that one-page teaser is going to get enough information to have some interested, as the name suggests, a teaser. We're going to give a little tease in order to get to the next stage. And that next stage might be a non-disclosure. It might be just a meeting with a broker. So, for example, for us, we'll send out a teaser. We'll set up a meeting to see your interest. If you say, hey, this looks great, we'll have a screening call. And if that screening call is great and there's a mix there and you feel that the buyer thinks there's good synergies with the seller, we'll move to a non-disclosure. And after you get through that non-disclosure, you may distribute a confidential information memorandum in that, as we call them, a SIM. That SIM is going to have a little bit more information than the teaser. It's going to disclose the company name. It's going to walk through the services that you offer. It's going to talk a little bit about your management team, your intentions, talk about your cap table. It also have some financial information. So you might see a bit more of a P&L, a balance sheet. May not be everything, but it might be enough to move things forward. With that information, most companies should feel pretty confident issuing an indication of interest. And an IOI, indication of interest, is, you know, we looked at the firm, there's enough information that's interesting, here's a price range of where you may be in. And many deals, we don't see IOIs, sometimes we do see IOIs. Assuming that those are done, you might get through that place. So what I'm getting to the point here is there's a number of stop gaps and information requests that move buyers through a process that allow them to gain comfort in putting forth an offer. And what we want to talk today are what are fair questions that are pre-LOI and post-LOI. And I just want to talk about, and Mike, if you wouldn't help me just understand, you know, what an LOI is and what are the key points to an LOI. And what can be changed in an LOI and what can't be?
Absolutely. So first of all, we'll start sort of setting the stage there. And I think just also to add some clarity, when Ryan says that as Revenue Rocket here, we represent both buyers and sellers, we don't typically represent them on the same transaction. I know sometimes there's questions about that. Well, like, can you facilitate, you know, a deal or whatever? In rare cases, we do that. But when he says that we're doing representing buyers, we're typically representing buyers on a specific transaction. And then separately, we may bring companies to market and represent sellers on a different transaction. But, you know, to answer the question about LOIs more directly, a letter of intent is a non-binding agreement that outlines the terms of a transaction. It's issued by a buyer to a seller. Pursuant to some level of initial or what we call pre-LOI due diligence. Pre-LOI due diligence should be enough if you're the buyer to get you comfortable with the business, the business financials, the health of the business, and help you drive to, you know, getting your valuation done, so you can offer, make an offer that is consistent with fair value. And, you know, it is non-binding in the sense that in many ways it works like a handshake. There are binding provisions. Typically, the binding provisions have to do with the non-disclosure. Just reemphasizes an NDA or non-disclosure that no one can talk about the transaction publicly or to competitors or other folks. Likewise, there's generally a no-shop clause. A no-shop has to do with, this isn't always the case, but I would say it's you know, the case probably 99% of the time. If you're going to undertake going into a substantive due diligence effort post-LOI, you know, both sides are going to incur some costs. So it's warranted that the buyer would say, if you agree to this, generally, you're off the market as a seller. Why we do due diligence, sort of put the deal together. And that's fair and reasonable. And so, you know, however, you should know that the price and terms as outlined in the LOI are non-binding. You can't go back and hold a buyer to those price and terms, particularly if they discover in due diligence some material negative impact to the financials or the values of the cash flows. Or maybe they might find an error in the financials or something as presented that could impact value and valuation. And that's part of why material and post-LOI due diligence is done.
So I think where a key portion I want to just narrow in on here is that the non-binding portion. So if I hear this right, the terms of the deal may have some change. And we just recorded another podcast in which it was really about retrades. And so you want to have it, no one really wants to go through a retrade at the end of the deal, the terms radically changing. But there's going to be things that are adjusted to get to a definitive agreement and a deal closed. But the terms are essentially non-binding in nature and can help two parties get to agreement on what that close actually is. The non-disclosure is always important. That's going to be actually, that's the one part of the non-binding that's binding, as well as typically a no-shop clause. And I think that no-shop is really important for buyers to understand. So the reason why this starts to become important, the faster you can get to someone to no-shop, that means that you get to get your deal looked at faster. And I will tell you, we've worked with buyers and we've worked again as sellers, we see this as well. There's a few different philosophies on submitting an LOI. One philosophy is let's make it quick, get the lockout in, and get something in place. The other philosophy is we want to kind of know everything before putting the LOI in place. Mike, what have you seen work for buyers when it comes to, you know, getting a deal closed? What levels are appropriate in that? In that it, maybe it's not so much a dichotomy, but what do you think?
Well, I think it's important to understand that it is in your best interest as a buyer to get to a signed letter of intent if you have interest in doing this transaction as soon as possible. Sometimes buyers confuse the level of diligence that they want to do post-LOI with pre-LOI motions. We think that's a mistake because if you spend a lot of time doing what can be done post-LOI before the LOI, you run the risk that that firm will sell to someone else. And we see this happen all the time where buyers go down a rabbit hole and say, you know, we need an analysis of, you know, very what would be appropriate things post-LOI as part of validating cash flows pre-LOI, and then they lose the deal because they've spent weeks and weeks analyzing data, or they ask for an exhaustive list of pre-LOI information in order to either get it through their investment committee if they're a private equity firm, or if they're a big strategic, they may have to go through multiple levels of management approval for which you know, there's a lot of information requests. And I think, you know, particularly when it comes to private equity, you know, investment committees, you know, if you're bringing a deal to an investment committee, you want to make sure that, you know, you're not caught flat-footed, right? So I think folks, analysts, partners, staffers, and private equity want to kind of overdo it or have a tendency to overdo it for the LOI so that they're, when they go to invest committee, get approval for the LOI, that they're not, you know, that one of those partners doesn't ask the question that they don't have a plausible answer for. And I think in some ways that can slow down the process. Or it may just be, you know, confusion on behalf of a buyer about what's needed pre-LOI and what's needed post-LOI. I would tell you that we advise lots and lots of buyers and have for many years that you really only need to analyze enough information to validate the offer and the structure prior to the LOI. And, you know, there may be differing opinions about this, but I certainly would think that, you know, understanding sort of the nature of the staff and maybe if there's any concentration risk of customers very broadly would be two other things that need to be understood pre-LOI, but much more granularly, you just need to be able to validate based on the reported financials that the cash flows support the valuation and the offer, and then issue the LOI. Because remember, it's non-binding. And if you're under LOI, you then have the time and reach and scope to do much more material diligence. And everyone feels more comfortable in that situation providing the information as well. So there's a level of comfort that if you come to a signed LOI or handshake agreement, that you're serious, right? That you're committed. And I would expect that seller to also begin to do diligence on you at that time. So you need to make sure as a buyer, you're prepared, that you have your financing in order, that you know how you're going to do this deal, because there's certainly going to be material diligence done upon you as a buyer as well. But much more importantly, our advice to buyers would be, don't overthink what you need to see pre-LOI. Just make sure you have solid numbers, that you may have asked some questions that could discount evaluation, like, you know, customer concentration and potentially employee census, blinded, of course. And then get on with getting on and get that LOI out.
I think you're right on, Mike. And so when I go back to a seller and preparing documents, a teaser, that's certainly not enough for an LOI. The CIM, the confidential information memorandum, if done right and you're packaged correctly, that will have enough information for someone to gain enough interest to ask good questions and get to an introduction meeting. So assuming that introduction meeting is there and you can align on strategy and you can align on culture, then typically you're going to have a financial packet available for a team to analyze. And I think it's important for a seller to take control of the narrative when it comes to that financial packet and deliver enough information that someone can make an LOI with a packet. And I would say that the things that we typically see on that are a P&L, historical P&L, as well as a trailing 12 months detailed P&L. We look for at least a historical balance sheet and a current balance sheet. We look for a forecast. We look for some management team bios. And then for the other parts I would say are important pre-LOI are some kind of redacted employee census to understand the key employees that are coming over with the transaction, as well as a redacted revenue by customer for the past 3 years for, I would say, the top 10 customers to understand customer risk. So if you're in a process that I think your CIM needs to have that in an updated financial packet that has at least that, that should be enough for evaluation. We conduct valuations every day that have essentially this information. I should also say a great overview of the firm, what space are you in, where you're at strategically, that put things in a different light. Mike, I'd love to get your examples, a few examples that you've seen and even recently of what's too much pre-LOI. What's something we've seen in a recent deal that is just like, I can't believe they're asking for this?
Yep. You know, we see people ask for some pretty crazy stuff. Like they want copies of 3 years of the either corporate or if it's a pastor entity, personal tax returns of the owner, right? That's a huge overreach pre-LOI. Now, certainly you would need to do that post-LOI as part of a comprehensive diligence review to make sure that, you know, taxes have been paid and, you know, that you're not potentially inheriting some sort of, you know, off-balance sheet liability, right? But it is a wild overreach ahead of a letter of intent, as an example, to be asking for copies of tax returns because it's not pursuant to developing an LOI. It doesn't support the valuation or the process to create an LOI. Likewise, there may be, hey, we need to see copies of the top 10 customer contracts. Well, yes, that's appropriate post-LOI, but certainly not pre-LOI. There is no value associated with or purpose even to make that request pre-LOI because it doesn't support the valuation conversation or supports the motions required to create the LOI. If anything, these kinds of requests made by a buyer make the buyer look somewhat ridiculous. They don't build confidence with a seller or a seller's advisor that you know what you're doing as a buyer if you're asking for things that are wildly out of bounds or what I would call nice to have requests versus need to have requests. And I think, you know, understanding and having clarity about every step of the process and what's appropriate at that stage will build confidence with a seller, if you're a buyer, that you do have a plan and that you're knowing how to execute it versus just on a fishing expedition for information, which you can quickly come to the conclusion if you're a seller pre-LOI, if you're asking for highly sensitive information that doesn't support the LOI creation. Tax returns, for example.
I think that you're exactly right. And when we look at this, there is a balance of what is required to make it comfortable, but not so much that it's burdensome for the seller. Think about the mindset of the seller here. They are, if it's requests that aren't in the packet, that means they're going and pulling something. And if it's, let's say a customer, someone has 3,000 contracts, they're not going to pull every single contract to go give you detailed information for it when it's not relevant towards changing the deal, so or making or updating the offer. So I will say, if I take my buyer's hat on, I want enough information to feel confident. What we have typically done in cases on the buy side is that if we have a list of questions for the seller, we prioritize the list. We walk through, here's the request we have it. And then if we verbally walk through, this is why we're asking for it. And oftentimes, if it's something very positive for the seller, it's going to increase the valuation. So it's worthwhile to include, and it makes a win-win deal for everyone. I would say some things that are completely off limits pre-LOI are customer lists and employee lists. Is that there should never, you should never see a name of a customer and never see a name of an employee pre-LOI. Post LOI, it's going to be a whole different story. You're going to get contracts. You're going to get a look of all sorts of things that are much more in detail. But pre LOI, those are pretty sacred things that shouldn't be shared. I'd say a tweener activity starts to become something like your recurring revenue per customer, and it's something that can materially change valuation. And if you have it, it can really be helpful. A lot of sellers don't have that ready. So it may be, if it's critical to your thesis and it's something that you need to do, I think it is appropriate to ask for it. But you may want to limit that ask to, let's say, the top 15 customers or the what makes up 80% of your revenue, not what makes up the 20% that can be changed. So, Mike, I think you've said a few times, you can attribute this quote better than I, but the last few percent don't really matter. So there's some, you know, getting a deal done and getting it executed is important, more important than trying to hash through the minutiae, especially pre-LOI.
Yeah, I think what's important to understand there is that there is hundreds and hundreds of things that need to be negotiated pursuant to an M&A transaction. So You've heard us say before that, you know, they are the most unnatural act in business. That is absolutely true. It is why, frankly, companies that don't use an intermediary or an advisor on either side of the transaction only have about a 1% chance of actually getting it done. And that's because of the complexity of what's involved with the cadence and appropriateness of requests for information, of discussions, of disclosure, and the many, many things that get negotiated into or out of the agreements, the definitive agreements, the legally binding agreements. And so, you know, I think to your point, Ryan, there's certainly at the very end of the process, oftentimes some pushing and shoving. And, you know, I learned from a very prolific acquirer and client in the past that the last 5% or so just doesn't matter all that much, right? Because if you built a strong business case to do that acquisition around, you know, the deal, and it holds up strategically, culturally, and financially, and you're moving through diligence, and maybe you see something towards the end that just doesn't quite, you know, or you think it warrants a minor change to the deal, you have to make a decision on if this is going to put the deal at risk because people have what's called deal fatigue towards the end. Is it really worth fighting for, or should we just let it go? And that's, again, where a competent advisor can give you good counsel. And certainly, you know, the same applies to the development of an LOI. There's a tendency, particularly if you're an analytical type individual, that you want to have everything you could ever possibly need to know in an LOI, things that are much more appropriate to negotiate later. You want to negotiate up front because you think you'll make it easier. But in fact, what happens is the likelihood you get to an LOI goes way down the more detail and minutia that's negotiated in up front. And so it's counterintuitive, but it just is what it is.
Mike, that's kind of the questions I had today. I hope buyers get that sense that have enough information to feel confident, but don't ask for the world. Sellers are going to respect that and understand that. Sellers feel you do have to provide enough that's out there to have a credible answer. So don't expect this as I don't want to give the impression this is not question free or dialogue free. There's certainly going to be back and forths, but understand that it's perfectly fair and happens all the time for a seller to say, good question, but until we see an LOI, we're not going to provide that. That's fair. So with that, Mike, I'll turn it over to you for any closing thoughts.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think one thing that we didn't talk too much about was on the other end of the spectrum, buyers that don't really do much diligence up front and then offer some broad multiple of EBITDA as a purchase price. We think that's equally a huge mistake. You're not building confidence with a seller that you're even looking at their business materially, yet you're making an offer to acquire. And I think those offers, we certainly don't see many of them. We saw some a few years ago pretty frequently. We don't see many of them anymore because it just sends the wrong signal to a seller. And certainly we'd recommend buyers do enough diligence to have confidence in their offer, but not so much that they put getting to a deal at risk. So with that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. Feel free to tune in next week for more advice, tips, and tricks around growing your IT services business or acquiring another one or selling yours. We look forward. Have a great week, and we look forward to tuning in next time. Take care.